Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm so delighted to be here with you. It is a beautiful day here in South Florida. I have my co-host.
Good evening. Dr. J.R. Quicklin here with you. And on this beautiful Tuesday, it is a time to just really enjoy the spring and enjoy the newness, what is happening around us.
Talking about spring, it's spring break here, and where
yes,
it is a mess in Miami. All over the news, you see people are influxing. It's like there's no virus, nothing is going on. It's like a haven for the pandemic.
Absolutely. You know, it gets that way in South Florida, particularly in Miami. You know, spring break, everyone is like headed south. If you don't believe it, try getting a rental car right about now, because of the fact they're all coming here. So, you know, you probably pay $200 for a bicycle for 3 days because of the fact everyone is headed here totally oblivious to the pandemic still going on.
Wow. It's just amazing how just with a switch that people feel everything is okay. And unfortunately, individuals feel that if they got the shot, then they can just go out and everything is going to be far and dandy and everything is going to be like it was back before the pandemic, but that's not true. I want to remind everyone that it has constantly been reported that just because you have the shot does not mean you're immune to getting the virus or spreading it, because you can always have the virus and not have any symptoms because you're asymptomatic. So please be mindful of people around you, especially your loved ones. If you don't care about that, think about your loved ones that you may expose to the virus by you being reckless.
Exactly. And we still can enjoy the privileges and the benefits of life. And we can enjoy them being careful and being safe, because we'd rather be able to talk about things that are positive and things that we can reminisce on than to be talking about, you know, good old auntie, she was a good person, or uncle, you know, Uncle Ray Ray, he's gone now. No, we want to be safe and we want to do the right thing because we want to be around. This past year should have taught us all a lesson about the frailties of life, really the vulnerabilities of life. And so we have to do all we can while we can, regardless of the vaccination or not. I'm happy about it. I plan on getting it next week, as a matter of fact. But I'm also looking forward to the fact of being able to enjoy life and not put anyone else in danger.
Okay, I'll check you out in a year. The verdict is still out on me about the shot.
Just make sure no aliens show up the week later, right after the vaccine, right?
The verdict is still out. So I'm just going to see, you know, it's because, you know, everybody has their own opinion, and, you know, I'm not going to down anybody that does take it. But I told my husband, I'm buying a bat by my bed in case he churns on me.
No question, he's going to be just fine.
Well, anyway, I have a dear friend that's joining us tonight, and she just, well, it's not just released, but in the past year, she has released a book called Celebrating Me. I had the opportunity of meeting her years ago through her sister, Sylvia Dunavant, and I tell you, from the first time we met, there was such a connection. It's like I knew her all my life. And I want to introduce to you Johnny Green, author of Celebrating Me.
Hello, everybody.
How are you, Queen?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
I am so good, especially that you have joined us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege and an honor to be on the same platform with you, because you know I adore you.
Aww.
Yes, I do. Yes. So thank you very much.
We were talking, catching up, because we haven't spoken. And we were catching up just prior to coming live, and you were telling me about your age, and I was like, wow, it's just unbelievable. But I know that tonight you will share some pearls of wisdom to so many thousands of women out there who felt like giving up, throwing in the towel, and saying enough is enough, and you know, who've gotten stuck in life because of life happening to them, who got stuck and are still stuck and don't know how to push through. And I'm sure that you will be able to drop some pearls of wisdom on them because of the fact that you've had an extensive life of so many things. You've dealt with, you know, domestic abuse, grief, obesity, you know, so many different things, and, you know, starting over, losing everything and beginning again. And so many women don't know how to shift once they've been in that hole. So celebrating me, why did you feel it necessary to release this book at a time like this?
I have to give all the credit to my sister and publisher of Chocolate Diamond Publishing Company, Sylvia Donovan-Hahn. I had worked on this book 3 years prior to releasing it, but I also taken 2 years and I did a lot of traveling, and I was going to do a book on traveling. And when it got to the point to put the book together, she said, you know, we should do a book on your life story. Let's do the travel later because it'll take longer to release it. And so I said, okay. And so she said, you know what? You've been through so much. Why don't we call the book Celebrating Me? And I'm like, fine, we'll do that. So it was like God was using her to lead me. And then by the time we got the book finished, it's like, oh my God, if I had done my travel book, who's going to want to travel? Who's going to want to buy a book on travel at this point in time? So Sylvia was a big inspiration in that title because of what all I've been through. She felt it's time for me to celebrate me because I've celebrated so many other people's during my lifetime.
I also, in reading some excerpts from your book, I see that from a young age, you felt like different from other people.
Yes.
Explain that, because so many men and women, Jay, I know you can attest to this, absolutely, you know, it's like you feel like a fish without out of water. You know, things aren't, everybody's around doing their thing, but you're different. What did that look like to you?
It's very painful, a lot of hurt. You don't feel good about yourself. One of the things that happened in my childhood, my mother got pregnant with me when she was 17. There's a lot of stuff that went on with that, and it's in the book. And I actually spent 2 years with my great grandmother and grandfather because she got married and went to a different city. And so when she came back, I was 5, and really I didn't remember her. And some of the things that went on after that was very painful for me, because we ended up moving from my grandmother. That was very painful. I started working when I was 11 years old. I was spending the night with a lady because she was a diabetic. I had to deal with the racial thing, part of being living in the South, coming home at night, having to cook, people looking at you like, you know, you're not good enough. You're not part of it. When I say that, one of the things is I saw my father when I was 7 years old, and the next time I saw him, I was 17. So I carried a lot of pain from not knowing my father and not having him in my life. I had a good stepfather. He was so amazing that he even bought me a car when I was 16. But still, I had that longing for my biological father. So there was pain there. And with living in the South, and when I got to be 13, I was cooking for the whole household. I'm the oldest of 6 children. And at that time, there was 4 kids in the household. So picture me, 13 years old, I'm having to get up and cook before I go to school. And then once I got done cooking, I had to do a load of laundry because my mother was pregnant again. She was sick. She couldn't help it, so I had to pitch in. And when Micah Jackson and Elizabeth Taylor said they did not have a childhood, I know what that pain looked like, because I didn't have a childhood. Because during the summer months, I worked. During the weekdays when I wasn't cooking at home, I got a reputation for being a good cook. I would go out and I cook in other people's homes. So it was very, it was like, I felt like I was abandoned to some degree. All I did was work. And it's kind of hard to describe how painful it really was. Mm. But I thank God that even though I went through all of that, I looked back and I said, thank you, Jesus, that I went through it, because I am who I am today because of that. My cooking for the family.
You can cook. You can cook. You can bake. I'm here to tell you, you should open up a restaurant.
I've had five of them. I've had wow. five. So with that, with all of that pain that I went through, I'll tell people today, Romans 8:28 says, all things, not some, all things work together for the good of them that love God and are called according to his purpose. Even though I was going through, it was a bad situation, but little did I know, God was working out my future. He gave me a passion for cooking. And with that passion for cooking, I was the first African-American woman to get a bid with the post office in California, the largest post office in the United States. Wow. So he used my pain for gain. Okay, so when we talk about loss, in 2008, when the recession hit, I had a business, a very lucrative business. That first month I started that business in 2006, I made $105,000. 2008, I wasn't even making half, but I had the same amount of employees. So things, I hit rock bottom. When I say hit rock bottom, if any of you out there listen to me and have hit rock bottom, you're in a good place. Because you're in the valley right now, get all the moisture that you can, because when he bring you back up on that mountaintop or wherever he lands you, you will have all the nutrients you need. I can say now that this is 2021. My life is totally different than it was in 2008. God restored me. And just like he restored me, he will restore you too. He has no respect of a person.
Right.
So I've dealt with abuse. I've dealt with all of it. And I have joy and I have peace. And a lot of time we as single women think, oh, we need a man in our life to be successful. You don't. I have been single for 21 years, come September 18, and I am having the time of my life because I spent the time to get to know Johnny. I spent the time to love who I am. I spent enough time for all of the hurt that I went through with the domestic violence, the verbal abuse, to not let anyone ever do that to me again.
So would you say, you know, and it's incredible because, you know, I don't have your book yet, and I can't wait to get it because you talk about celebrating me. And, yes. You know, the conviction I hear when you tell your story, it really indicates the fact that you have reached this place in your life. I mean, you talk with this conviction of peace, this conviction of, and listen, you talk about the traveling book, you're taking us on a journey right now. I mean, we're on this journey with you, and we're seeing you talk about pain, loss, but regaining and celebrating yourself. And so one thing that you said that sticks out to me, and I know many also find themselves there. You said that you took the time to get to know you. And yes. Getting to know you, let me ask you, in that process, was there time that you basically, if you would, settle within yourself the fact of, number one, you know, hey, I'm not the cause of that abuse. Number two, I'm not the one who enacted that. Was it a point where you was pulling back layers, forgiving yourself for certain things and yet it's still reassuring yourself? Or what was that like for you?
You know what? It was painful when I looked at how I allowed some of the things that happened to me. And when in the Bible, it says when two get married, you become one.
Right.
Okay. So I had to meditate and go through the fact that I became one with a man that I'm married to, but yet there was pain that was being inflicted on me. And so I had to come to the realization, I'm not going to pinch myself. I'm not going to put scissors in my arm or whatever to cause me pain. So what place was I at? How low was I? And why did I allow the affliction to happen and stay in it? Okay, if we deal with the first marriage, I had one child. And I never wanted to have just one child. I wanted to have two. And I wanted to make sure they were the same father. So even though the marriage was going bad and it was abusive, I went ahead and had another child so that I wouldn't be just a one child. And you need to, women's, men's too, you need to know the law of your land. So I read that if you're married to a man for 10 years and some man already has said, you know, oh, she's just this, she's that, because she did what I'm getting ready to tell you. So I found out that if I stayed married to him for 10 years, that I could draw his Social Security. And the reason I wanted to stay married to him for 10 years.
Why are you laughing, Jay? Dr. Jay, why are you laughing?
You talk about hot topics to the soul. This is hot nuggets.
I encouraged him. He had 2 years of college. He went into the Korean War. And when he came out, I met him. And I, you know, felt he had the passion to go back to college. Fine, go back to college. We'll have kids later. So he went back to college, and the last year that he was in college, they laid him off his job. He was working and going to college. I was admiring all of that. And so the last year I told him, you know what? Don't worry about it. I'll work and I'll support us. You go ahead and finish college. During that era, and after he came out of college, that's when our marriage started to change. He met some man who was getting a divorce, and he started going out with them after school, and he was enjoying this. And so it got to the point that, you know, it's like, I can't take this anymore, but I'm going to hang in here because I've put you through college. I'm not going to let some woman come in and I'm going to be a total loss because I've invested into you. And so that's what I did. I hung in there for 10 years. And when we went out October 12th, on our anniversary, that 10th year, I was sitting across from him and I was like, you know what? This is the last anniversary I'm going to sit across from you because I'm not going to take one more day of abuse. So I said to him, my mother needs me. I packed my bag and I went to Mississippi for 2 weeks. And during that time, I started to peel the layers back and start to look at myself and come to terms with why I was still in this situation. And when I came back, 3 days later, I left.
Okay.
So you have to really, you know, get in tune with you, you know, and that's what I do.
So what I hear you saying that you were strategic, even though you were in pain and not allowing to flourish and be who you knew you embodied to be. You stood there in that space, which a lot of women do, rather be for children or be for financial reasons. They stay in a situation that's uncomfortable, hoping for a greater end. And right. Unfortunately, you know, it happens all the time where women allow themselves to be put in a situation and it doesn't end well for them. But right. Because you were strategic in your planning and in your exit strategy, some people just walk out and leave and say, I don't want nothing from them. I don't care mm-hmm. about nothing. But at the end of the day, you better care about something, especially when there are kids involved.
That's true. That's true. And I did not totally plan it perfectly, because what I did was when I got back on the third, because of the peace that I had, I let him, he started in on me and I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. And so I decided, okay, I'm leaving and I'm packing the kids' bag. And he says, no, you can leave, but you can't take the kids. And I knew that I had to exit that night. I could not stay another night because I was fearful of what I might do. And so when I did that, and like I said, women's and men's know the law of your land. I did not really realize that when I left, the law was going to look at it. I abandoned my children. Mm. He rode with that. So I had the fight of my life.
Mm.
So you need to know Oh, but girlfriend, let me tell you, I tried to get back in the house because my attorney said if I could get back in the house, I could better plan it. But he was on to me. He wouldn't take me back. So what I did was, like I said, I had the fight of my life, but we ended up with shared custody. And, you know, that's better than me just losing my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so as you talk about that, you know, that presents a very real problem, a real eye-opener, I should say, for people that may find themselves in an abusive relationship and they have kids, and people from the outside looking in a lot of times say, well, why don't they just leave, or why don't this happen? And a lot of times these are things that you do have to consider. You have to consider Yes. the fact of the children. You have to consider whether or not you're going to be charged with abandonment. You're going to have to be, you have to consider a lot of things. And so it's important to get in touch with those resources in that community to be able to guide you along. Meanwhile, you know, hearing you tell the story is one thing. People mm-hmm. must understand when you're going through it, you're in
totally
real time.
Different.
You're in real time. So you're trying to live, which at that time you're just really existing.
Trying to breathe.
While trying to plan and plot your way out of it. So when we see people such as yourself give your story, we have to recognize the fact that there's a lot that went into that. I mean, a lot. We can't even begin to explain the mental energy and this mind space you had to be in to eventually get through it and not knowing if you're through it yet. You know, it's almost yeah. like you finally walk through the door and you go, you know, am I out? You know, and so I have to applaud that, because the fact you're learning lessons within lessons, you know, the fact that, hey, my babies, I'm not about to let my babies just go like that. I got to fight this. So compromise was a part of it, and yet it's still, the compromise was for the greater good.
Yes, yes. And also the level of pain. And let me say this, ladies, don't be afraid to walk out if you're being a physically and mentally abused. And the reason I say that, when you stay in it, the kids know what's going on. They can feel what's going on. And I think it's more damaging to your kids to see that than to remove them out of that situation or remove you out of the situation. Because I actually worked with a young man who parents got a divorce after he got grown. And the level of pain that he went through was just unbelievable. I used to go to lunch sometime and talk to him. But so yes, your lifestyle's going to change, but be willing to let it change so that you can get peace and get your joy back. Now, when you talk about the level of pain, let me tell you how bad the level of pain was. I was the first African-American woman to become a supervisor for Harley-Davidson at 3700 West Juno Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm a supervisor for Harley-Davidson at that time, and I'm going through all this pain, and I'm having to make a decision about leaving my husband that I've been married to for years. Got a second child. The last year that I was in this marriage, because I got to try to make this make it through this night year, it was at the point when I got off of work at Harley-Davidson, I would have already been out to lunch and got myself a half a pint of Seagram 7.
Wow.
And I would put that half a pint of Seagram 7 in my purse. And when I would go pick the kids up, I'd go to the bathroom and I'd drink some of that Seagram 7 just to take the edge off.
You got drink alcohol. Let people know what that Seagram 7 you're talking about. That's alcohol.
Yes. Yes. Like JB, Scott. Yeah, Seagram 7 whiskey. I would drink some of that just to take the edge off so that I could go home and cook with cooking and you know, being there, you know. So rather than just abandon the whole thing, I was trying to make it. And it got to a point after a year, Seagram 7 had become a crutch for me. So women, don't turn to alcohol like I did. But it helped while I was going through it. But those are some of the things that I did to cope with it. And also, I want to bring out, it's not just women that's abused. Like now with the pandemic going on, you have so many people that are in marriage that don't want to be. Trust me, when the courts open up, there's going to be so many people in divorce courts, you're not going to believe it.
Yeah, because
they don't even like each other in the same house. Yes, you know. So it's just unbelievable the level of stress. While I was going through my divorce and trying to make sense of everything that was going on, my boss called me in because he noticed there was a change in me. And he told me, you know, the company paid for a psychiatrist. And, you know, we don't usually go see psychiatrists.
Right.
But I taken him up on it. I went to the psychiatrist and come to find out the psychiatrist and I was going through similar.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, rewind that one.
Wait. You went to see a psychiatrist and he was going through?
Yes, because he and I both was getting a divorce. And like, say, for instance, you know, when it's my time to have the children, I take them back. It was like, you're too early, you're too late. It was always a problem and an issue. And he was having the same thing. So it's like the psychiatrist and I was bouncing off of each other, you know, and it truly helped me. And I'm like, God, look at you, how you supplied all my needs according to your riches and glory. You know, wow. So if you need a that's not the last time I've been to one, you know, because it really helps. Sometimes right. You just got to have somebody to talk to.
I really appreciate your transparency. You know, it's interesting because regardless of what profession we're in, we're still people first, right? We're still human first. So yes. The psychiatrist going through the same thing. He probably found a support in you as much as you found with him.
We became friends.
Yeah. You became friends because it's a point of identity. But something that you said that I think is so important, and we've done a lot of work, and I say that myself, Dr. Val and others, is to really, especially with our community, to get them to understand that there is no, or there should not be this stigma because of the need of mental health, or mental health help, or to need assistance. Surely, if you were dealing with heart palpitation, you would go and see the doctor because of the fact you're dealing with heart palpitation. When you're going through the abuse, the mental, the emotional abuse, and all the trauma that comes with that, yes, kudos to your job who suggested the fact that we pay for it. And there are a lot of people that listen to us right now. Their job paid for mental health, for counseling, for therapy. Yes.
A lot of people don't know they have that.
And they don't even realize it's in their coverage or they don't take advantage of it. But the reality is that you need to do so. You need to find it to be the case. And if you're a good therapist, a counselor, clergy, whatever, you need a you need a counselor. You need someone that you can go to. And because it's healthy for all of us. You know, beyond the fake until we make it, some things we can fake it, but so far, because it shows up in other parts of our life. You know, at first I heard you say that, man, the Seagrams or whatever it was, you was turning it up for what? You was turning it up because of the fact things are coming from every different direction.
Yes.
There are some people that are destructive, meaning the fact they're turning up ends up being physical violence, end up being some type of abusive thing that are much more dangerous. And so I applaud you because the fact you took that next step. Somebody listening today need to understand they can take the next step. And they don't have to wait till after the pandemic because there's so much telecounseling going on now and get the help that we need. I mean, just look at you. I mean, I hear the confidence. I see the peace. I mean, listen, celebrate me. Let's get to that chapter. I want to celebrate.
Oh, you know what? I cannot leave out my second marriage.
I was getting ready to say you did it again. So when did you get a reboot? How did that come about?
Oh my God.
Because you're a bit of a daredevil.
I think I still, you know, sometimes like feel like I had an out of body experience with that marriage. I was a manager and I hired this man to work for me. And I have made a pattern I don't date employees, okay? So something happened with my car. He followed me home. And so I didn't have a car that Sunday. So I invited him to go to church so I'd have a ride. And so he went to church with me. So I'm trying to hook him up with one of my cousins. So when we get back, he said, can you come in? And so when I went in, he says, I'm interested in you. I'm not interested in who you're trying to hook me up with. So things just started to move kind of fast. He was a minister. And believe it or not, within 6 weeks, we were very compatible, very, very, liked a lot of the same thing. We were married in 6 weeks and I catered my own wedding. And we got married on Friday, June 13th. Everybody in town just about came to the wedding uninvited because they wanted to see, because he was known as Val, that bad boy, turned minister. So then after we got married a year, we moved to California in 1987. And he got ordained and he was, you know, ministering all over. And he and I was doing prison ministry together. But there was a verbal abuse. Things like, I never wanted nothing big but a Cadillac, nothing old but money. I was 8 years older than him. I was a woman of size. And that was, and he wouldn't just say it to me, he'd say it in front of others. So that's a form of a put down in the form of abuse. So that messed
with me. Verbal abuse.
Yes.
Verbal
yes,
and mental abuse, trying to diminish you from the inside out.
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes I wonder if he really knew how much he was abusing me, you know, because he started out being a very kind, loving man. I can't disregard the fact that he treated me like a queen, but that a level of abuse was there. I don't care how a person treats you, but when you're being abused, that the other part just goes out the door. He was a good cook. Absolutely. He would do laundry, and he seemed to adore me, but I just couldn't take that. And then, you know, not
was
just
he drinking Seagrams.
No, he didn't drink. He didn't drink, but he had.
It sounded like he was a Jekyll and Hyde.
He was. He had a habit of. He would tell me something, but it would be half the truth. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? He would like distort the truth, and I'm like, that's plain lying, you know. He's well, like, I just didn't tell you the whole. It tell you everything. So I got tired of the lying. You know, there was just so many things. But prior to it getting as bad as it did get, I helped him organize a church. He pastored a church there in California. And one day he was standing out by the swimming pool. And I went out and I said, you know what? I really don't want to tell you this, but the Spirit said, tell you, if you don't get off your arrogancy and your pride, you're going to lose everything. Well, when I was saying that, I didn't realize I was part of the everything. And he did. Lost the church. He lost me. He lost everything.
Wow.
And ladies, don't think that if you're making more money, because at the time that I was going through a divorce, I had two businesses prior to the other one. I had two businesses. And he quit his job to come work for one of my businesses that was open 24 hours. I didn't tell him to do that. That created more pressure on the marriage. And so after we started the divorce, he didn't go get a job because he knew what kind of money I was bringing in those restaurants. Mm-hmm. So when we get to court, guess what? I want alimony. His attorney says, we need her to pay a certain amount of alimony because the house note got to be paid, the car and all this. And I thought, there is no way. I'll go down to nothing before I do that. But look how good God is. The first business that I had, the company I worked for before I bought that business, they decided they did not want a cafeteria any longer. So the business went away. On my second business, it was bid time. It was also a post office. And that was going to get the bid. And I said, wait a minute here. You know, if I get this bid, I'm going to have to sell it. Because I made my mind up. I'd go down to
home.
I was not going to pay. Like I said, don't fear hitting rock bottom. Because there are so many great stores, Penny's and other business that have hit rock bottom and they've come back.
Rebounded.
But when you're walking with God and you're meditating on his word, trust me, he'll keep you in perfect peace. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm happy. Money make them happy. That man make them happy. But if you got true joy, that's what I want. I don't want the happiness. I want the true joy. Because if you got the joy, that's of the Lord. Can't nobody take it from you. Nobody.
Wow.
So, yes, I've been through. And, you know, and then same thing with some, so there might be somebody out there who being abused on their job. because I have a lady that's in the book. There's seven other people telling their story in my book. And one of them was abused on her job. Mm-hmm. We have one lady talking about being sexual abused. One that was the psychiatrist, she was raped. We have a psychiatrist in the book. There's seven. And we also have a man in the book who has he's a mind, body, and spirit counselor. You know, so it's not just me telling my story. There are seven other people telling their story also. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing book.
Yeah, the thing is, so many people have gone through situations, and it's good for you to have a collaborating book where they're in the book with you, because you, mm-hmm. like I said, your life has been so extensive, the different areas that you've had to overcome. Now, there's, you know, you're a woman of a certain size, and there's so many women that are so insecure because of their weight or how they may look, thinking they're unlovable. But speak to that. How did you overcome that insecurity to arise up and not just marry once, but twice, and have some tricks on the side?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good one. Because when I was working for Harley, I was not the size that I am now. You know, I gained weight. And a lot of the weight was gained through being depressed and overeating. And as the psychiatrist in my book says, when you're abused and you're depressed, all of that attaches itself to our organs. And right. That's what causes high blood pressure, diabetes, and all the other things that we're dealing with. And that's some of why we're dealing with those things. I used to come home at night after going to work. I'm the supervisor of two shifts at Harley, 17 young ladies that are working for me. And I came home and I felt like a nobody. So I would sit there and I'd eat a candy bar. And it was like that little demon sitting on my shoulder saying, you know what? You're nobody. You're never going to lose the weight. So I eat a second. So I was actually in a mode of self-destruction.
Right.
And I just kept going at that. And when since I got my divorce, the second one, I did the same thing because I was so angry at, I wasted 16 years of my life. And it seemed that my weight just kept going up. And I was so depressed that I'd go to work. And this time, I never tried to get in management. This time I got 11 stores. I got five in California, five in Nevada, and one in Texas that I'm over these store managers. And the mold of the makeup of the company was a size 10, 8, not necessarily my skin tone, but I'm their supervisor. I'm the manager that's over them. And so I stuck out like a sore thumb. So I was very successful. My team was one of the most successful team in the whole group. But even though I'm successful, I had let myself get to the point where I felt like a nobody. When I went home behind those four doors, I was depressed. I was an introvert. But I can tell you, I started working on this book 3 years ago. I started recording it at Sylvia's Donovan house. And as I recorded and started to put this on paper and start to release, and then when we start work on this book to put it into, to become a book last January, I thank God for Sylvia. I thank God for her because she kept telling me, no matter how much the scales say, you are somebody. And she's told me, you know, start celebrating you. Look at all that you've been through. And I didn't realize how much I'd been through until I put it on paper. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm really still standing. Am I really still standing? And so from that, since then, I've lost 52 pounds.
Wow.
Yes, I've lost 52 pounds. Awesome.
But whether I lost the 52 pounds or not, when I walk in a room, hey, I don't feel that insecurity. When I go home behind the closed doors, I don't have that anymore. You know, God has restored me. So I love myself, whether I'm overweight was I'm a size 20, 26, I still feel good about myself, whether I'm dating somebody or not. And trust me, I haven't been, because as Bishop Greg Davis said, relationship is work and it's risky. And I'm not sure if I'm ready to take that risk again.
Well, yes, I know every time I see you, you are fab from the crown of your head to the sole of your feet. You don't miss a beat.
Thank you.
And and I am so delighted to have you share, you know, from him. And I want to encourage all that are tuning in now right now to go to the website and order your book, celebratingme.net. You know, a lot of people don't like reading anymore. You know, they want to look at reality shows, etc. But you can go to the website and order her book, celebratingme.net.
And they will get a free bookmark.
Here's a cover. Here's the book right here. So you don't have to show it. It's right there.
Oh, okay. And the bookmark has the bookmark has a mustard seed faith scripture on the back of it. So they get a free bookmark with the bookmark.
Awesome. And that website is celebrating me. So I'll be putting it up periodically. We have another few minutes in the show if you want to share some additional things. And being that you went through so many things and after the losses you've suffered, what was that thing? Because, you know, everybody has their level of enough. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their level where they're at rock bottom and they have an aha moment and feel that they're still breathing, they're still opening their eyes and saying, what next? What was your jolt of lightning that caused you to resurrect and say, I'm not done yet?
The jolt of lightning that made me feel I'm not done yet, I felt that I had to come to the point where I felt like I am somebody and I deserve more and I deserve better. And I, with the second marriage, it was like, I've hit rock bottom before. I know what it's like. And it, like with me, I have a lot of faith in God. I would say that my life, when it comes to the level of faith, is like an Abraham type faith, because I've studied him extensively, him and Sarah. And I know that Hebrews 11:6 said, but without faith, it's impossible to please God. And so my level of faith is what helped me to get to where I got to, enough strength to walk out. Dr. Bell, I also want to hit on the grief in the book. 2013, I was one of the most excited grandmothers in the world. My grandson is going to be in Los Angeles on the 23rd of March. I had all of this planned. We were going to San Diego. We were going to so many places that I had planned. My grandson arrived in Los Angeles on the 23rd of March. On the 27th of March, he had an asthma attack and he died. My only grandchild, on the 30th of March, Saturday night before Easter. And I said to my family, our plans was to go to church and go out to dinner. And we are going to honor my grandson and we're going to do just that. Now, that is one of the most hurtful things that has ever happened to me in my life. That level of pain, I cannot explain. I'm in Illinois right now with my daughter. She's upstairs. I asked her to go upstairs so that I could talk freely, because she's still hurting. I've been here with her since November 21st, and I will be here with her through this month, because I don't want her to go through this alone. Now, that's a level of pain that's hard to
explain. I never know it.
Yeah. And I know, because even last night before I went to bed, I had women out there on Facebook saying, pray for Matthew. If you're on Facebook and you remember who you was, pray for this person. I did a lot of praying last night because I know the level of pain of losing a grandchild. I don't know the level of pain of losing a child, but I do of a grandchild. And that pain is not explainable. 2013, and we're still dealing with pain of that. Yeah. It was like a nightmare on Elm Street. You know, you hear people talk about things like that happen, but when it happened to you, because here she's came there from Chicago, and we're having to have a memorial service in California and bring his body back to Milwaukee to bury him.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. But that is a lot. I said,
God will restore your joy. So whatever you're going through today, I encourage you, not because I wrote the book, but read it, because it's 8 other people's story in there. And if you're in pain, I can tell you right now, it will help you. And the next thing is, if you really need some more help, get yourself a psychiatrist. Because I can't begin to tell you what that has done for me. And if you don't have a walk with Jesus, he will give you joy, unspeakable joy. And it helps me to live with the pain of the past. Yes. The only time I look in the past, the rearview mirror of my past now, is to see where God has brought me from and to see how he has carried me all these years. The footprint in the sand.
Mm. Wow. You know, one of the things, you know, and I tell you, and you have a way of sharing too that is, that I think is very comforting to people. Very soothing to people, to be able to be transparent and make yourself vulnerable of the realities that are there, you know. And, and you know, and I know Dr. Val just talked about what was that point? What was that? You know, everybody knows where their enough is. Everybody understand what's that jump off point. But somehow or another, to be able to put these things in perspective, because you didn't write the script for that March 23rd. You didn't write that, you know. You didn't know what would happen from that point on. And life is going on one track this way, and then these things hit. And to be able to navigate, out of adversity and still keep your joy, and still, and sometimes we have to fight for our peace. And I know it's
fight like, for it.
But we do have to fight for our peace, because it is so easy sometimes to give in to the fact of the woe is me. Why me? Or to look at things that people oftentimes do is that they guilt trip themselves. They start thinking about things they did. They shouldn't do, oh, this is karma coming back at me. But I love what you talked about a few minutes ago. You talked about that piece. That piece is so incredibly important. It is a piece. And I think that it does take a certain degree of not only talking to yourself, but talking to God, a certain degree of coming to this place of peace. One of my favorite passages deals with Philippians, where he says, and the peace of God that surpasses all understanding shall keep our hearts and our minds through Christ Jesus. Now, the incredible thing about that is that when that happens, it's almost unimaginable. Even you're sitting there saying, well, I should be sad. I should be mad. I should be. But something about that peace that seems to just embraces you and it stabilizes you. But then you did something with the peace, because I think that once you found that peace also became somewhat of a guide. I call it a stabilizer. Mm-hmm. It stabilizes us to be able to navigate the water, because we have to remember something now. When Jesus was out there on the sea and he spoke to the raging wind, he said this, peace be still, which is an interesting phrase. Peace be still. Right. It's almost as if he called the very roar out of the sea and basically commanded peace to take over. And when we're able to do that with our lives, we'll reach a place where you've reached in writing your book, Celebrating Me. And I love it, because the fact you didn't just talk about all the good things. You talked about all the things that led you to where you are. And out of all that I've been through, I'm celebrating me. I'm celebrating that I'm here. I'm celebrating that I've overcome. I'm celebrating that I have mastered some things. I'm celebrating the fact that I'm not the same anymore. I'm celebrating that even my losses has contributed to my successes.
Oh, yes. Hallelujah. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it is true that a lot of times you will have to lose in order to gain. And, yes. You know, you're talking about biblical and one growing up. My first introduction to the Bible was the book of Job. Oh, wow. I read that over and over, and you just couldn't tell me in my teens that I was being slayed. That, I mean, I had my heart broken, and I was like, oh my God, why does this hurt so bad? You know, and we go through situations like that thinking it's over with, and here it is. You know, I'm like, over 60 now, and God has still been faithful. But when you're going through the process, it's like you can't breathe. You're like trying to catch air and keep your heart moving. And I would always hear, though you slay me, yet will I trust you.
Yes.
Yet will I trust you. I don't know what tomorrow is going to hold. I don't know what next year is going to hold, but I got to trust you. And when you do that, you take that burden, that weight off of yourself, because you believe in a power greater than your own.
Yes.
And see, when you believe in a power greater than your own, there are no limitations.
That's right. Absolutely. No.
There are no limitations to what is possible. So those that are listening, men and women, this isn't just for a woman show. This is about men and women that have reached their point of breaking where they feel that they can't go on, that life is over. They've been stripped of everything during this pandemic. You've lost your home. You lost your job. You lost your car, even that relationship that you held so dear. But you're still here, you still have you, and you are always your greatest asset.
Yes.
Always. That's something nobody can take away. Nobody can take you away from you. We can give ourselves away.
Right.
Absolutely.
We can give ourselves away, but can't nobody take you from you? Even if you're in a hostile situation, your mind can still be free.
That's right. Totally free. And Dr. Vail, as you were talking about Job, one of the things that keeps me daily and has kept me is because I have read the book of Job so many times.
Ooh.
And I have made it. And if you in the audience doesn't know what we're talking about, read the book of Job, because I have made it to my 42nd chapter.
Wow.
He gave Job more than he had before. The enemy came in and took and took and took and took, but Job didn't cuss God.
In abundance.
And Job, oh gosh. He hung in there till the 42nd chapter, and he gave him double for his trouble. And that's where I'm at. I'm past my 42nd chapter, and I am enjoying going through all that I went through. I have made it. Thank you, Jesus.
You know what I appreciate about you inside of the night? You did it about three or four times. As much as you as a woman told your story, you kept saying, you know, not just women, but men also. And I could appreciate you saying that, because the reality is that we as men sometimes have this false sense of what masculinity means. False sense of masculinity. And so inside of it, we think that means that we shouldn't feel pain. We should endure setbacks. We should not feel loss. But that's absolutely incorrect. You know,
that's right.
You know, loss is loss. We hurt.
Yes.
We hurt. Whether it's divorce, and one day I'll talk about that. You know, I'll talk about it. I'm quite sure that'll be a bestseller for a little bit. You know, but the loss that goes into that, the hurt, the pain sometimes, the embarrassment, rebuilding, the sense of failure, all of those things come within it. And somewhere along the line, you have to be able to face it head on. Adversity introduces a man to himself. Mm. But the man has a response inside of it. And my response is not to act like I'm the coolest cucumber that's on the tree, but rather than to recognize the fact there's some pain here that I need to work through. There's healing that needs to happen in my healing. Watch this. My healing cannot happen if my fingers are pointed toward the person or the object that I thought brought my pain. Mm-hmm. My healing must happen when I look up and understand who that is omniscient, who knows all. And that's where Job really found himself. I realized, you know what Job was able to say what he said? Because Job understood this, that all that he had prior to the fall and loss, God had given it to him.
He had given it to him.
He did nothing to warn it. God had given it to him. So if God knew what he was doing, watch this. The first few chapters, God knows what he's doing. The rest of the chapters of your life.
What did he say? He knows the way that I take.
Exactly. Yes. He knows exactly. That's why he was able to say exactly that. He knows that. And so when we get to that point there, because all that other stuff oftentimes is the enemy trying to bring about this sense of self-condemnation, pride, making you feel like you're defeated. I'm not defeated. I learned a definition of struggling that I really appreciate. The fact that I struggle, or that you're struggling through something, somebody need to hear this, is the fact that you're struggling is not necessarily a negative. The fact that you're struggling, meaning that you haven't died, that you haven't stopped trying, you're still moving. You still got life inside of you. And I'm telling you, that caterpillar struggles to get out of that cocoon before it develops its wing and become a butterfly. So if you're in your struggle, consider it a place of your development, a place of a birthing, because you shared your story tonight. And I'm telling you this, look here, we might as well have had all of them, Dr. Seuss, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, because you made it feel that way as you shared your life and your story. What we have to understand, you showed us through your story tonight, you went through different chapters. You went through different seasons. And yet and still, you came out. You came out. There's a birthing each time you came out. And that's what we have to understand. Celebrate where I am. I might not know what tomorrow will bring, but I'm going to celebrate all today that I have. Because today is what I have.
Yes. Dr. Val, I want to say just one other thing. When I was back in Mississippi after my last divorce, I was a non-emergency driver. And I had this customer who had moved from St. Louis to Mississippi. And she had some health challenges. So I was taking her from Tallatown, Mississippi to Gulfport for treatment. And we were on our way back and it was a really bad storm. And she said, are you going to pull over? Are you going to keep going? So an 18-wheeler passed me up and I says, I'm going to put my blinkers on. He has his blinkers on and I'm going to follow him. And I said, we'll probably run out of the storm if we just keep going. And when we got out of the storm, I looked back in the rearview mirror and it was still storming. It was still dark. It was still lightning and thundering. And I told her, look back. And I told her, forget about St. Louis. You're here now. Make the best of this season. This is a season where God got you. So make the best of this season. And it was, that sticks with me. I was telling my daughter about that last night. And I was telling her, honey, if you just only look back in the rearview mirror to see where God brought you from, because we're in different seasons. If I'd have sat there and did nothing, who knows how long I'd have stayed in that storm, but I kept moving. So I'm speaking to you today. If you're in a storm, just keep moving. Trust me. God does not have any respectable person. I don't care what your bank account is, how good you look, if you're driving a Mercedes or if you're driving a bucket. He has no respectable person. What he did for me and the joy he has given to me, he'll give the same thing to you. So keep moving. Don't forget to keep moving.
Wow, that is powerful. Thank you so much for sharing. And Dr. J, I told you she was a bad girl.
Listen here, I could sit here all the time. Listen, I'm telling you, just come out. Come on, kids, gather around.
Well, like I said, I will be in your town sometime between September and the following September. And if anybody need me to come speak, because I have speaking engagement already, just contact Chocolate Diamond Publishing Company and let me know that you want me to stop in your town. Because I'm going to be going to all the states except for Hawaii and in Alaska this year and next year.
Wow. So and here is the cover of your book, Celebrating Me, which is so beautifully done. And those that want to order the book, they can always go to your website and also contact you there as well, as far as speaking engagements, or if you want to do a book signing, they can go to that website and put in their information and they will get a response and get you on this schedule.
Yes, absolutely. Awesome.
Well, it has been a great show, as I said, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join me and Dr. J tonight. You shared a lot of information that I know that will empower so many people that are stuck. I think you freed some people tonight.
I hope so.
And I appreciate that.
I prayed before I got started. I said, Lord, anoint the words that are coming from my mouth. Let somebody else get the joy that I have, because that joy, you gave it to me, and I know that the anointing is what breaks the yokes. So somebody got set free.
Thank you so much. And I want to encourage you all to become a soul partner. Go to my website, fromthesoulofawoman.com, and be a soul partner. What does that mean? That means that you are strengthening my hands to continue to do what I'm doing, not only at the radio show that you're listening to, but also in the community. And my foundation serves domestic violence and children in single parent homes. That's my heart. That's my passion. So you can be a soul partner to help me to continue that work that I'm doing. And Dr. J, you can reach him at www.jrthickland.com. He is doing a powerful work. He also serves in domestic violence. He's a minister of the gospel. He's a teacher, a coach, a trainer, and he's available too. So be sure to visit his website as well. And again, don't forget to get that book at celebratingme.net. Good night and God bless.
God bless you. Thank you.
Good night.